The first part of the trek was balky and frustrating as the snowshoes or the bindings that held them to the other's feet seemed to give out every few steps. The whole expedition seemed to have failed before it had started. But then I noticed we'd been going for a whole hour without pause. I sipped from the tube that ran down to my water pouch and munched slowly on an energy bar. I looked around me and actually enjoyed the view. All's well. The thought hit me like a snowball in the nose. I'd been out of the consent for a little more than 2 weeks, eating Extramuro's food the whole time. Leo and Arsabalt and the others had probably made it to Tredegar in less than a week, too brief a time for them to be affected. But I had been out long enough that the ubiquitous chemical must have taken up residence in my brain, subtly altering the way I thought about everything. What would my Fraz and Sewers have said about the decisions I had been making recently? Nothing too polite. Just look at where those decisions had gotten me. And yet, even in the midst of this terrible situation, I'd been strolling around with nothing on my mind except for how pretty the view was. I tried to force myself into a sterner frame of mind, tried to envision some bad outcomes so that I could lay plans. Braj's sticker might serve as an anchor in a crisis, but he might just as well use it to cut himself free if one of us fell in. What should I do in that event? But it was no use. Braj had made himself the leader and had made reasonable decisions to this point. There was no limit to the amount of time and energy I could put into spinning such alarming fantasies in my head. Better to attend to the here and now. Or was that the all's well talking? For the first few hours, we followed the tamped down tracks left by the tractor. Then they veered downhill, following a cirque, a crescent-shaped vale cut by a tributary glacier, down toward the valley floor. This would take us straight to the military convoy, and so here we broke away from the trail and ventured across trackless snow for the first time. The first bit was slow going as we had to work our way up out of the cirque. By the time the slope began to level, I was ready to pull the ripcord in Braj's phrase. If I threw myself on the mercy of some military Drummond operator, what was the worst that could happen? I hadn't broken any laws. It was only my three companions who had to go to such ridiculous lengths to avoid the authorities' notice. But for better or worse, I was roped up to them and couldn't cut myself free without endangering their lives and mine. I had to wait for them to pull the ripcord. Then we crested a subsidiary ridge and came in view of the coastline. I was startled at how close it was. We had to shed some altitude, but the horizontal distance didn't look that great. We could easily pick out individual buildings in the port and count the military transport ships moored at its piers. Military aircraft were lined up at the edge of a dirty landing strip wedged in between the coast and the foot of the mountains. We watched one take off and bank to the south. One or two civilian ships were also in the harbor, and this gave us all the idea that if we could only get down there in one piece, which looked like less than a day's travel, we could buy passage on one of them and get out of here behind the next icebreaker. So we took a rest up there in preparation for what we all knew would be a long and arduous final push. I forced myself to eat 2 more energy bars. The things were starting to make me sick, but perhaps that was just me worrying about the all's well. I washed them down with water and refilled my snow pouches and my fuel bladder. Our supplies were holding up well. The sledge drivers had given us plenty, perhaps thinking that they might not be returning for a while. I was glad we had taken action, moved out, instead of huddling in that tent, not knowing if we'd live or die. After an hour's rest, we repacked the toboggan and got underway again. We descended into a round-bottomed cleft, another cirque that cut across our path and seemed to curve toward the port. Braj decided to follow this one down. The risk was that it would become too steep for us to negotiate and that we'd have to backtrack. On a few occasions during the next couple of hours, I became very worried about this, but then we would come around a bend or crest a little rise and get a view of the next mile or so and see that there was nothing we couldn't handle. On steeper bits, the toboggan would try to run ahead of me, and then I would have my hands full for a while. The only remedy was to slew it round ahead of me and let it pull me downhill as I leaned back against its weight. At such times, the others, who didn't have to contend with such a burden, would outdistance me. The rope joining me to Lara would draw taut and remind me of his impatience. I felt like reeling him in and smacking him. But Braj kept our pace from running out of control. Even in stretches that looked smooth and safe, he plodded along at the same rate, pausing every couple of steps to probe the snow ahead of him with his tent pole. I had long since learned to distinguish Braj's snowshoe prints from those of the others, and from time to time I would notice, to my indescribable annoyance, that they had diverged. Braj had zigged for whatever reason, and Dag had zagged, and Laro followed in his kinsman's steps, obligating me to do the same, and hence pass over ground that Braj had not probed.